I'm really excited for the Shir this week. Parshas Vayera, I mean, it's ridiculous what Parshas Vayera has to offer in general. But even in terms of the parallels, there's so much. I was leaving things on the cutting room floor left and right. I even put one piece in at the end because I just had to have something else. But realistically, I doubt we're going to get to more than the first two pieces here. And we'll see what we're gonna talk about. There are things which are, it's like, you know, when they used to drill for oil, and like back in the day, they didn't need to drill, the oil just came out of the ground. So some of the parallels here, I mean, Sodom, for example, and the Ramban points this out, the parallels between Sodom and what happens at the end of Shoftim with Pilegesh Begiva, that whole episode, it just jumps out. And the clear point the Navi making there about how you want to say that Bnei Yisrael have reached the absolute nadir, absolute rock bottom a few hundred years after they enter Eretz Yisrael, maybe even much less than that. The Jews have turned into Sodom, which is really the ultimate, you know, Canaan representation. There's so much. This week, really want to focus laser-like on one personality who often gets overlooked. And it's not because this person is not someone who's interesting. In fact, it's a lot of controversy involving this person, but there's just so much going on. Avraham, Lot, Sodom, the Akedah, the Malachim, Sarah, Yitzchak, Yishmael. One person, though, that I want to zero in on this week is the personality of Hagar. And the one thing that's so interesting about Hagar is that probably the most, the thing she's probably most famous for doesn't actually appear in the Chumash. Ask who is Hagar? And what they'll probably tell you is, oh, Hagar was the daughter of Par. It happens to be, there is no pasuk that tells us that Hagar was the daughter of Paro. In fact, the first time we're introduced to Hagar, she's a shifcha, she's a maidservant to Sarah. She's an Egyptian maidservant, but there's no pasuk which says that Hagar was a princess. And yet, somehow everyone knows it. Everyone knows the Rashi, that Hagar was the daughter of Paro, and that Paro was so amazed by the conduct of Avraham and Sarah that he gave his daughter Hagar to Sarah to be a maidservant. He said, better she grow up as a maidservant to Avraham and Sarah than she grow up as a princess in my own palace. What we're going to do today is we're going to look at a couple of those midrashim. We're going to tease out a parallel to see where I think this is coming from in the Pesukim. What's the evidence in the Pesukim which leads Chazal to that way to read it? And then really importantly, what does that tell us? We're going to see that's going to tell us a lot about Hagar, and it's going to tell us also a lot about the people who we're going to find Hagar being linked to. So, you know, even before I load up the screen share, Baruch Hashem, the email went out this week, and Baruch Hashem, the source sheet was even attached in the email. I don't know if anyone saw. I titled the Shir, I was kind of proud of this title, not going to lie. I titled the Shir, The Princess of Egypt. So why did I title The Princess of Egypt? Well, as we'll see, who is the Princess of Egypt? And I'll turn it over to everyone else here. Who's the Princess of Egypt in the Chumash? Without looking at the source sheet, if you have it.
Basia
Bas Paro. Yes, exactly, Basia Bas Paro. So we're going to see, I think this is exactly where Chazal are getting this idea from, that Hagar is the daughter of Paro. We're going to see some very, very striking parallels between the story of Hagar and the story of Bas Paro, which is only going to highlight the differences between them. And that's really going to set us on our way. Okay, great. So let's load this up. And here we go. So two midrashim off the bat. One, the Rashi, right there on the spot, right? Last week's Parsha, when we were first introduced to Hagar as a Shifcha Mitzris. So right away, Rashi says, Bas Paro Haisa, she is the daughter of Paro. There's nothing in the Pesukim that tells us this. We're going to see later on, the truth is, even in this very Shir, a great example of Rashi, you know, when Rashi quotes Midrashim that he thinks are in the Pshat, and when he leaves Midrashim that he does not think are in the Pshat. We're going to have a great example of that a little bit later. Rashi quotes this Midrash. He thinks it's sufficiently Pshat that it belongs in his commentary. He says, Hagar was the daughter of Paro. Kishra'a nisim shenasa lasara amar mutav shetehei biti shefcha b'bayit zeh. It's better that my daughter be a maidservant in this house and not be the head woman in a different house. Okay, this idea comes up in Chazal elsewhere as well. One interesting example, which is a little bit different, is in the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, which I have here in source number two, which tells us that the night that Sarah was kidnapped was the night of Pesach. And so the early run of the Makos that the Egyptians suffered already happened the night of Pesach, right? It was Leil Pesach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings to Paro and his house Nigaim Gedolim, right? Terrible plagues. We're going to revisit those plagues a little bit later, Amir Hashem. And then at the end, so the Pirkei Elazar kind of moderates this a little bit. You know, apparently Pirkei Elazar thinks it would be a little bit far-fetched for Paro to give like his head princess daughter to be a maidservant for Sarah. He says, Kasavlas Hagar Bito mi pilag sho l'shivcha. So Hagar was his daughter from one of his concubines. So Pirkei Elazar is mitigating this a little bit. The Rashi Rabbah that Rashi quotes, you don't see any mitigation at all. She's the daughter of Paro. Okay, so let's try to see where this is coming from. So before we, you know, get to the other Bas Paro, the Chumash, we should just, you know, familiarize ourselves with the psukim here, because there's so much happening in Vayera. Let's just take a minute to go through, right? So we know the story, but let's see. So Avram gets up in the morning, he takes some bread, he gives it to Hagar, right? This is Hagar's second story. We had the story in Lech Lecha when Hagar ran away from Sarah after Hagar abused Sarah, and then Sarah abuses Hagar, and Hagar runs away, and Hagar gets told by the Malach she's going to have a child, and she should name the child Yishmael, because Hashem has heard Shama'el, Hashem has heard her her pain. Okay, so now she's being sent away, so they just give them food, they run out of water, they get lost, she throws the boy into the sichim, right, the shrubs or the reeds, whatever vegetation is there in the desert. She then goes away from him. The Torah has a very interesting way of describing, by the way, how Hagar walks away from Yishmael. It says, harchik ki mitachave keshes. She walks away from him like the distance of the shot of a bow. Certainly for Yishmael, that's an apt analogy. Yishmael, who's going to become a famous archer when he grows up. But we'll come back to that in a little bit, maybe, the image of the bow shot. She said, Al ereb mos hayeled. And I don't want to see the death of the child. But sheshev mineged. So again and again, the Torah emphasizes she's sitting some distance away and she's crying. So Hashem hears the cry of the boy. The Malach calls out to Hagar. Malach Hagar, what are you doing? What's the problem? With Pasuk Yud Zayin in source 3 over here. And okay, Hagar is told, pick up the Nar. Famously, Hashem has heard his voice. Ba'asher Husham, where he is. We know Chazal quote, where he is now, not where he's going to be in the future. Yishmael might not do so well long term, but at least in the short term, things where he is now, he's a tzaddik, and therefore Hashem has answered his cry. There's a pretty blatant criticism of Hagar, because Hashem has heard the cry of Yishmael. He has not heard the cry of Hagar. And then Hagar, Hashem opens up Hagar's eyes. She sees the well. She gives him to drink. He grows up. He becomes an archer, Rovek Hashas. And the story ends with Hagar going to get him a shidduch, Mazel Tov, a wife from the land of Mitzrayim, right? That's, and with that, Hagar walks off the scene. Yeah.
Should I come back?
Why did my
video disappear? Okay, hopefully it'll come back. Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. Good. You can. I don't know why. Hold on, just one second. For this one.
We can hear you.
You can hear me. Okay, for some reason the camera died.
Yeah, we can't.
You can't see me. You can see the source sheet though, right?
Yes.
So, because that's, there we go.
Now we see you.
Yeah, usually start video usually helps to get the video start. Sorry about that. Right, fine. So, right, basic story of Yishmael and Hagar. Hagar might come back into the story in Parshas Kisa and Chayesar next week. The idea that Keturah is Hagar. I think we will talk about that, but we'll talk about that probably not next week. We'll probably talk about that idea when we get to Parshas Toldos. We'll talk about Yitzchak in a couple of weeks. But at least the name Hagar, as far as Hagar goes, from now on, she's gone. Why did my screen stop sharing? Okay, so now as I reload the mystery, there we go. So you reload screen share. So now let's shift over to the story of Bas Paro. And we should jump out, right, turn to page number 2, are a number of parallels between the two stories. And it's not long. The story of the daughter of Paro and Moshe is what? It's like seven psukim, right? And yet, despite being so brief, the overlaps we're going to find are going to be unbelievable. Four off the pad over here. Number one. So we saw Hagar, right, throwing the boy. Where was the boy? Tachas achar ha-sichim. Under one of the vegetation, under the shrubs. Where is Moshe, the young boy Moshe, who's also referred to as the Yeled, right? Both referred to as the Yeled. So the boy Moshe is put into the Suf, al Sfas Hayor. He's placed under the reeds that are in the river. So Moshe is in a very wet river, Yishmael is in a very dry desert, but they're both being placed underneath the vegetation. We know that each child is crying. The voice of the child is there prominently. Hashem is the one who hears the kol hanar. Hashem hears the cry, the tefillah of Yishmael. And Masya finds out, right? She's aware that hine na'ar boche. Right. Exactly, right? And Rashi comments, it's kind of funny for it to be na'ar because the na'ar is like 3 months old. Na'ar usually would be someone who's a little bit older, but exactly the same word. We have the Na'ar Yishmael, and we have the Na'ar Moshe. They're both crying. So they're both under vegetation. They're both crying. They're both being heard. Afterwards, they're both given to drink. Yishmael is given water to drink. And what's Moshe given to drink? Moshe is given milk to drink, right? Moshe is being nursed. Yishmael's moved on from the nursing stage. But still, I mean, his mother is almost nursing him, right? Patash Gesenar, the mother is giving water to the child. And then finally, each story ends with the child growing up. It's kind of surprising, but if you think about it, we have very, very, very few stories of a child growing up in the Chumash, right? We have like a story of them as a kid and then them growing up after they were a kid. I mean, there's Yishmael, there's Moshe. I think that might be it, even in terms of, you know, where stuff happens. Yes, does it actually say Vayigdal? I think it might. Very possible. Very possible. Okay, so that's a lot. I mean, there's a lot right there, right? The idea that they're in trouble, they're placed under the vegetation, they're crying, they're taken in, they're given to drink, and then they grow up. But those similarities only serve to highlight the fact that there are differences and there are blatant differences between them. So, for example, who is the one, and this is not going to make Hagar look good. I apologize in advance if there are any Hagar fans tonight. You know, 2 weeks ago, I trashed on Noah. So, you know, we try to be totally objective here. But Hagar is not going to come out of this one looking good. Maybe we'll rejuvenate or rehabilitate her in a couple of weeks. But this week, it's not going to come in good for Hagar. So who brings in the child? So the Torah told us about Moshe. So Basia, who of course that's not her name, at least in Shemos is not her name. We'll see where it comes from. So she sends her either her arm or her maidservant, it could be either one, to bring in the basket. And in contrast, what does Hagar do? She doesn't send out to take the boy. Vatashlech es hayelad. She sends the boy away. Tachas achar hashichim. The core difference is that Hagar, despite being the biological mother of Yishmael, abandons him. That's what Hagar does. She abandons Yishmael. She can't take the pain of watching him die of thirst and sickness. So she dumps him. She dumps him under the vegetation and she walks away. In fact, the image of the bow, it's almost like she shoots him away, Kaviyacho, right? She's like twang. She's far away. So she's, and I'm just, not just leaving. Didn't say, Vatanach es hayeled. She like gently put the boy down. Vatashlech es hayeled, tachas achar hashichim. She sends him. She dumps him. Bas Paro is the exact opposite. She's sending, he's very far away. We know the Rashi, right? That she extended her arm and the arm miraculously extends. It's like Michael Jordan in Space Jam at the end of the movie, right? Whether it's the extended arm or whether it's sending her her maidservant, she's bringing him from very far away and she's bringing him in. She's not his mother, She's an Egyptian princess, and this is a Jewish baby. See, if the person, it's totally backwards. The person who is the mother is sending her child away. The person who's not the mother and she has no business with this kid whatsoever is going to great lengths to bring the child in. Who has mercy on the child? When it came to Hagar, it was not Hagar. It was Vayishma Elokim Eskolanar. The Ribbono Shel Olam heard the cry of the child, and it is Hashem who has mercy on Yishmael. When it comes to Moshe, it is Baspar herself. She hears the baby crying, Batachmol Alav, and she is the one, right? Her mercy is stirred by the cry of the child, not the mercy of Hagar, who again is the biological mother of the child who she is walking away from. The idea of seeing we have in both stories. Twice the Torah talks about what Bas Paro sees. Again, it's such a short story. We have something that comes up twice. It's a theme over here. So she sees the teva, vatere es hateva, and then she opens it up, right? Vatiftach, vatere es hateva. She opens up the box, and oh my gosh, there's a baby in there. What does Hagar say? Hagar doesn't see. Hagar says, al ere, b'mosayelet. I don't want to see. She's closing off her eyes, right? One line earlier we saw she was closing her ears. Only Hashem is hearing. She's not. And now she's closing off her eyes. And then, you know, similarly, then Vayivkach, Elokim, Asina Vatera, they both, something's Hashem opens her eyes and she sees. So she opens, right? She, Bas Paro, Basya, is opening the basket herself. And she herself is seeing the boy. Bas Hagar, she needs Hashem to open her eyes for her in order to see the well. And finally, how does the story end? This is a little bit of a speculation, but the story of Hagar ends with her marrying off Yishmael and sending Yishmael off to be with an Egyptian woman. And at least this part of the story of Basya, the daughter of Paro, ends off with her sending Moshe back to his Jewish mother to be with a Jewish woman. So we have in only just a few psukim, right? You see how the links kind of sensitize us to the diametric opposites we have here. And the theme that we have is even though structurally we have two kids, two little kids in similar predicaments who are both similarly being saved. And yet while that is happening, they're in trouble, they're saved and they grow up. You have one person who is the biological mother who is completely ignoring her child in the moment of crisis. Again, understandable why, but still that's what's happening. She is prioritizing her emotional pain over the needs of her child. On the other hand, we have this woman who is not the biological mother of Moshe, who is bringing him in, having mercy, hearing his cry, seeing him, and ultimately adopting him as her own son. There are a couple of points in Chazal, which, yeah, question? Well, are they exactly right? So that's what we started off with. Is where is this coming from exactly, right? But only one is Bas Paro on the Psukim. But when you notice that Hagar, the Hagar and Yishmael story, Hagar is an Egyptian, and what happens with her child is so parallel to what happens with Basya and her adopted child, we can see why Chazal would sense the link between the two. A couple of points in Chazal which deepen this even further. We'll come with percent two or three over here. One. It just jumps off the page. So when Hagar leaves the house of Avraham, so she strays in the desert, and Rashi comments right there, "Batelach batitava midbar Be'er Sheva." She went and she strayed in the desert south of Be'er Sheva. What does Rashi say? Chazra legilulei beis avia. She returned to the idolatry of her father's house. Now we can understand why Rashi would say that. The evidence for that in the Psukim is very strong, because what's Hagar going to do at the end of the Parak in the Psukim? She's going to marry Yishmael off to an Egyptian shidduch. Presumably the Egyptian girl that she's going to marry Yishmael off to, I assume they're pagans, I assume they're worshiping idols. She's probably not looking for the monotheistic Egyptian mishpacha to marry her son into. So the evidence is there for it in the Psukim. And then Rashi says, it's sufficiently pshat that he's going to explain. That's the drash level of meaning when the Torah says, batelech bateta, right? She went and she strayed. Tarti mash means two things. She strayed in terms of her physical location, and she strayed spiritually. In stark contrast, what does the Medrash Rabbah say about Bas Paro when she goes to wash herself in the Nile. Shmos Rabbah says, Lirchotz migilulebe migilulebe savia. She's going to the Nile to cleanse herself from the idolatry of her father. I think it's really interesting that Rashi doesn't see this one as enough of a pshat to be put into his parish in the Psukim. But it's clear that these two chazals are twins, right? We have two women. One is going and she leaves the house of Avram and she's going back to the idolatry of her father. The other Egyptian woman is going to the Nile to cleanse herself from the idolatry of her father. It's like, you know, undeniable. A couple of other ones. As again, this is, you know, getting back and getting into the world of Chazal. What happens to Yishmael after he grows up? So the Torah said he was an archer. He rove kashas. What's he doing with his archer? He's not running archery in day camp, says Rashi. He's dwelling in the desert and he is highway robbery, people who pass by. In other words, he's attacking the innocent. The innocent travelers are being assaulted by Yishmael. That's what happens. He grows up. Is that a question?
Yeah, I have a question. Yeah. Because I always have a problem with this because it says later on with at the Akedah, the Medrashes, that Yishmael is one of the Na'arim. So when does he come back? And how's it just, the timing is just a little strange to me.
Yeah, so you have to wonder you have to ask how to juxtapose those. We'll see one reason why, in a little bit, we'll see one reason why you put Yishmael as one of the Ne'arim. It's also very possible that Yishmael does tshuva, right? And this is, Rashi Rashi gives you different views in different places. That he did tshuva. Rashi in the Gemara elsewhere is much more critical of Yishmael. So you get different impressions in different places. Whether Yishmael is the Yishmael who suddenly reappears in Chayesara, all of a sudden at the burial of Avram Avinu and lets Yitzchak go first, or is the Yishmael the person we see over here who's marrying an Egyptian and walking around in the desert with the bow and arrow, right? So there are lots of Yishmael himself is complicated, and we can sense there are different clues that give us different senses of him. For sure, this Rashi over here, whether things change, you know, earlier quoted before, Basher Husham, that line assumed, yeah, when Yishmael was a little kid, he was pure and innocent, and then things get much darker. Maybe things get much darker, but then they, you know, get better a little bit later on. We know people who were, you know, very sweet kids, and then they were very troubled in their teens and their 20s, and then, you know, they get older and things mellow a little bit. Could be. But for our purposes right here, Yishmael grows up. He leaves the house and he's shooting a bow and arrow. Rashi says very reasonably so that he is doing highway robbery, which is what basically Yishmael then does for many, 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 many years. Yishmael's nation does many, many years after that. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do right after he grows up? Vayigdal Moshe, right? So there we go. Second time. You're right on. Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grows up. And when he grows up, instead of Vayigdal Vayishev Bamidbar, instead of growing up and going to the desert to ambush people, he grows up and he'd say, Elacha Vayar B'Siv Losam. He sees the suffering of his brothers and he finds the Egyptian who is attacking the Jew. And we know what happens next. So we have one person who grows up and the first thing he does when he leaves home is attack the innocent. And the other boy, when he grows up, what he does the first time he leaves the house is he protects the innocent and attacks those who are attacking them. So we put it all together, right? And we have the two stories where the structure of the childhood is so similar, but the attitude of the mothers is the exact opposite, and the result of the children is also the exact opposite. Young man Yishmael and young man Moshe Rabbeinu are in completely diametrically opposed places, as Chazal are picking up. Now, there's one piece here which can maybe take this a little bit farther. There's a couple of interesting midrashim, which are, you know, it's hard to see where exactly they come from, but I think they're all talking to each other. So we quoted before the Medrash Rabbah from the Shmos Rabbah, which said that when Bas Paro, i.e. Basya Bas Paro, was going down to the Nile River to cleanse herself, so the idea was that she was going to cleanse herself from the idolatry of her father's house. The Medrash then continues to give another view. And it's not clear where this sukkah comes from. Says the Medrash, look at source number four over here. Rabbanan Amrin, Bas Paro, Mitzaras Haisa. Actually, she was suffering from tzaras. Lafichach yardel erchotz. So that's why she went to the Nile River to get some relief from the terrible skin ailment that she had. And then as soon as she touches the teva of Moshe Rabbeinu, she is healed, and that's why she has such love for Moshe. Okay, interesting idea. There's also maybe a sense linking Bas Paro to Miriam over here, you know, the two women in Moshe's life who thanks to him, are healed from tzaras. But there seems to be more than that. If you look at the Targum Yonasan on the Pasuk, the Targum Yonasan also has this idea that there is a terrible skin affliction happening. Except here, maybe things will get a little bit more familiar. So, you know, the Targum Yonasan in general, you have to, what I did was I bolded the parts where he is adding to the Pasuk. So I put the Pasuk up on top, and then I put the Aramaic translation with all the things which are added. And then down here is the Hebrew translation of the Aramaic. All the Torah tells us is Paro's daughter goes down to wash herself in the river. She's got her daughter, her maidservants with her. She sees the teva. She sends out Amasa and she brings him in. That's it, right? She goes to the river. She finds the box, brings in the box. Says the Targum Yonasan, the Gari Mimra de Hashem. So there was a statement from Hashem. And Hashem imposed Sulko de Shachna, which is Shchin. You know, Shchin, that's blisters and boils, right? Vidalekas basar ba'aret shel Mitzrayim. So Hashem brings a terrible skin ailment, burning pain in the skin to the Egyptians in the aftermath of them passing the decree to throw the babies into the river. Okay, and so then what happens next? So the daughter of Paro, so she runs the Nile River to try to cool her skin from the plague of Shchin, which she is suffering from. And then the Targum Yonasan says at the end that as soon as she touches the teva, so she is healed. I suggest that Chazal are seeing this idea of the Egyptians being stricken with a skin ailment because of what they're doing to the innocent Jews. That is a replay of how Chazal see what is happening to Paro and his household in last week's Parsha. When Paro abducts Sarai and brings her into the palace, so there were Negaim. What are Negaim? So usually a Nega is Tzaras, and that's exactly what the Bereishis Rabbah said. Right, so in this week's Parsha over here, Shemana b'Paro shalaka b'Tzaras. Avram's Paro had Tzaras. So again, we're seeing this idea of a linkage. We have Egyptians oppressing innocent Jews. We have Hashem responding with a skin ailment. And then one Paro, Paro last week did what he did, and Paro's daughter is going down to the Nile River. Again, we see another. Yeah, it's Saras and Shechen. I mean, they're basically, I would suggest they're basically the same thing. Okay, that was like a little bit out. This is an example of how once you kind of pick up the trail of the link between the two personalities, the daughter of Paro in Shmos, Basia, and Hagar, so that trail can then just help unlock different Midrashi Chazal, which seem to just be hard to figure out where exactly they're coming from. Now, the last major piece for Hagar and Basia, which I think is going to be really super instructive and relevant, is one last similarity, one last link and contrast between them. We kind of noted this before a little bit when Alan pointed out that that Moshe is called the Na'ar, right? That one funny point where is, yeah, right. So those terms, Yel and Na'ar. Notice the name Yishmael basically never appears. Not basically. It does not appear. Yishmael's name does not appear in the entire parak. Not once. His name is gone. He's either the Yeled, or he's the Na'ar, or he's the son of Hagar HaMitzris, or Hashem himself. Hashem doesn't refer to him as Yishmael. Hashem tells Avram to calm down. He says, Gam Ben Ha'ama, the son of the maidservant is going to be a goy gadol. Sarah refers to him that way also, right? When she wants him out of the house. The name Yishmael is gone. Doesn't exist. Happens to be. Very good, right? So let's try to explain why it's not there. It happens to be that the Torah uses the term yeled or na'ar again and again and again, describing Moshe Rabbeinu as well in the story of Basya Baspar. Now, why is it so significant that Yishmael's name disappears from the parak? Because Hagar forgot what Yishmael's name actually stood for. Why was he called Yishmael? So the Malach said to Hagar, you're going to have a child. Call him Yishmael, ki shema Hashem el anyech. Hashem heard your pain, and therefore Hashem is giving you a child. The very name Yishmael means Hashem listens to your cry. Hashem listens to your pain. When you're in crisis, daven and cry out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hagar completely forgets that. She abandons that whole legacy. She never davens. She drops Yishmael. She gives up hope. She goes off on her own, and she just cries for her own pain. She doesn't daven once. Torah tells us, Yishmael Elokim El Kol Hana'ar. Yishmael may have remembered his name, what his name meant in Pasuk Yud Zayin. He was probably, well, we know he was at least 15. He was at least 15 because Yitzchak's been weaned and they're 13 years apart, but not much more. So we can kind of think of Yishmael as probably a teenager. Let's say Yishmael's a teenager in the story. Okay, so the Na'ar and Yelet, it's all there because the name Yishmael is gone. She has forgotten what Yishmael's name means. And in stark contrast, the reason why Moshe's name doesn't appear for all this time is because he doesn't have a name, right? He's just a Yelet. What happens at the end? V'egdal ha-yel v'atayil basparo, v'atahi la levain, v'atakra shemo Moshe. She takes him in, she adopts him as a son, and she names him Moshe. We have Hagar then, who is forgetting what the name of her son means, and her son's name drops off of the page. And Basya herself is actually giving Moshe his name. Chazal take this a big step further, because it doesn't really make any sense for Moshe. He's 3 months old. Kid has a name. In fact, Chazal say Moshe has many names, which you can find in different places. Medrash Rabbah, a beautiful statement, says, Afal pisha harbe shemos chayilu l'moshe. Moshe had many names. Lo nikva lo shem b'chol ha-Torah. Halakamo shakaraso basya bas paro. Right? The name that Basya gave him is the one that sticks. Va'afa kadosh baruch hu lo karev b'shem acher. Hashem says, I'm going to go with your name. So the name that Hashem himself gave Yishmael, his mother forgets. Here the total opposite. Moshe's mother, Basya, gives him the name which Hashem actually adopts. Hashem says, you know, he's been Avigdor until now, let's say, one of Moshe's other names. We're changing it. We're going to go with the name from here on out that Basya is giving, that Basya is giving to Moshe. And of course, the idea of, you know, drawing out of the water, it's not just something that happens to Moshe, but that's basically something that Moshe does, drawing all of Bnei Yisrael, right? It's a name that also foreshadows Moshe's whole destiny. And then the beautiful piece to really to close that point off is what Chazal say in Vayikra Rabbah. You know, where did the name Basya? So obviously I should have put it on here. We know her name is Basya, or Bisya technically, because that's we're told this in Divrei Hayamim. The name does not appear in Sefer Shmos. But Chazal tell us, when did she get the name Basya? So it came from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Amar la kadosh baruch hu l'basya bas paro. Moshe lo haya bincha v'karas bincha. Moshe wasn't your son, but you took him in and you called him your son. Af at lo biti. You were not my daughter. You're the bas paro. Vani kore osach biti. But I will call you my daughter. Shnei amar the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim eila b'nei bisya bas ka. So Hashem is renaming the daughter of Paro, and he is giving her the name Basya. So it's right there. It's just total opposites. Hagar's child has the name from God, which she forgets. And then Basya has a different name. She herself, Chazal are now saying, is going to be the one who is given the name, the daughter of Hashem. She is born in life as the daughter of Paro, and then she changes herself to be the daughter of Hashem, and that is the name that Hashem himself is actually good. Now, before we look at the other piece of this, which is Hagar and Avraham. Okay, I hear that. Moshe has an issue with Tzri and an issue Elohim, but I think the important piece for us to take away from this, and I'm going to stop the speech for a second. We'll load up again in a second, but I just want to share what I think is the actual idea that's coming out of here. And there are two points. One, from the perspective of Moshe and Yishmael, is the Torah wants us and Chazal wants us to appreciate the massive impact of their mothers, right? Look at the power that a mother can have. You know, we have Yishmael, whatever potential Yishmael has, Basher Husham, right now, maybe has a fighting chance. But by the end of the parak, his mother is marrying him off to a mitzris, right? He's out in the desert. He's being married off to an Egyptian and he's out. That's it. There's no chance. There's never no chance, but there is little chance going forward. Moshe Rabbeinu, where do the values come from? Where does the value of running out to help the vulnerable, helpless Egyptian slave, Jewish slave, from the person who's attacking him come from? That's exactly the behavior that his adoptive mother, Basia, does for him when he is a child. The massive impact of the mother and the contrast. You want to look at what happens to Moshe when he grows up and he's helping people, and where Yishmael grows up and he's a bandit? Look at the treatments of their mothers, right? That's piece number one. Hagar, who, in a sense, you know, and then piece number two, you know, this leads into this, is the behavior of Hagar and the behavior of Bas Paro. Let's be clear. Let's be sympathetic to Hagar. She has to see something terrible. She's watching as her child is deathly ill. She can't handle it. But what does she do at the end of the day? At the end of the day, she puts her emotional needs before those of her child. She throws her child away and says, I can't do this. He's on his own. I need to be there for me. I can't be there for my child. I need to be there for me. And as sympathetic as we may be, Torah's telling us that's cruelty. And what does Bas Paro do? She could have ignored the kid. It wasn't her kid Bechlal. And yet she sees the suffering, she runs to the suffering, and she brings the kid in closer and closer. Hagar, the emotional distance, won't refer to her child by his name. And Bas Paro brings the child in and calls him by his name. Chazal are telling us that these two Egyptians, you know, in a sense, it's ironic because their children were so impacted by the parents. And yet, even though that is so true, we look at the story and this tells us the impact and potential that a parent can have, that a mother can have. The story is also telling us that at the end of the day, if I don't take control for myself, who will? These people both are products of Mitzrayim. They both are products of corrupt pagan Egypt with everything it stood for. And yet the Torah tells us you can transcend it or you can fall back into it. Hagar ultimately goes back to where she came from. She literally goes back to where she came from. She marries her son to an Egyptian woman. Chazal tells us she's going back to the idolatry of her of Mitzrayim. She's going back to the cruelty and the selfishness of Mitzrayim. And yet there is Bas Paro, right, who tells us, you may have whatever background, it's not an excuse, because everybody can look at the daughter of Paro, and if she could just abandon that whole worldview and come to the Nile to dip and say, I'm out of this, and she can be at just as much a Gomelas Chesed as any of the Avos or Imaos that we find in Sefer Bereishis. So that can be true for anybody else as well. So the story of linking Hagar to Bas Paro tells us, number one, right, the impact of the mother on the child, but also we still have to take responsibility for ourselves. We decide who we want to follow, we're not doomed to any particular destiny. Now, with a few minutes left, we got to just take this one step farther, because we have to see that to understand Hagar, the Chumash has one more stark contrast. And that is between Hagar and Avraham. Chazal described Hagar's weeping in the Medrash in source number 10. And Hagar basically tells Hashem, it's not fair. Matachas dvarim klape mala. She's complaining to Hashem while her child is sick. Happens to be Hagar has a fair point. What does she say? Amra, esmol amartali. Yesterday you told me harbe arbe ezaracha. you will have such a vast nation. Yishmael is going to grow and multiply and become a tremendous nation. Achshav hu meis batzama. And now I see him in the desert dying of thirst. It's not fair. It's a good taina. It's a good claim, what Hagar says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But who has the exact same claim that they can make? Yesterday you told me that my kid is going to be as big as the sand and the stars. And today he's supposed to die. Avraham Avinu, right? Exactly. Exactly. Same exact thing, right? And in fact, Chazal and Bereishis Rabbah have Avraham Avinu saying the same exact thing with one massive difference. Take a look at source number 12. Chazal say, what did Avraham say to Ribbono Shel Olam? Esmol Amarta ki Yitzhak Yikar L'Chazera. Yesterday told me Yitzhak is going to be your descendant. Achshav Kachnas Bincha. Now you tell me he's going to, you know, I got to kill him. Same exact claim. What's the difference? When do they say it? Hagar says it complaining to Hashem in the moment. Avram doesn't complain in the moment, according to the Medrash. Avraham complains afterwards. He doesn't even complain. Avraham davens. Avraham leverages. Avraham says, you gave me this impossible, incomprehensible commandment to kill my son, and even worse, to kill my son who you promised me was going to be, you know, my total future. What is the Medrash saying? Continuing. I conquered my independent position and I accepted it and I did what you wanted me to do, even though I thought it was absurd. Now let's talk, says Avraham. Now, next time, when my kid, when Yitzhak's kids are sinning, you should conquer what you want to do and you should have mercy on them. In other words, Avram and Hagar are in very similar positions. They have a very similar claim on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Chazal are saying that Hagar is complaining in the moment. Avram doesn't complain in the moment. He's quiet. He does what Hashem wants him to do. He suspends all the massive challenges he has. And then he comes afterwards and he says, now in the merit of me passing the test, let's have that payoff for my child. Chazal are getting this link between Hagar and Avram, not just in the fact that they have a similar test, but that the stories themselves, the Akedah, and the experience of Yishmael have stark, stark, stark similarities. Just look at these, right? They begin some Vayashkem Avram Baboker in the Yishmael story, Vayashkem Avram Boker in the Akedah story. Vayikra Malach Elokim El Hagar Min HaShemayim. The Malach calls out to Hagar from the Shemayim. The Malach calls out to Avraham from Shemayim. The Malach tells Hagar, pick up the na'ar. The Malach tells Avraham, don't hurt the na'ar. Hashem opens up Hagar's eyes and she sees the well, which she uses to save her son. And Hashem opens Avraham's eyes and he sees the ram, which in a sense he also uses to save his son because he can offer his son the ram as an ola instead of his son. We have the same reward in each story. Yishmael is going to be a goy gadol. I think that's okay, right? That's the promise to Hagar. Her son will be a great nation. And Avram gets the same promise that he's going to be his son, Yitzchak, will be like the stars and like the sun. And both stories end either with a shidduch or with a foreshadowing of the shidduch. But here, it's a little bit dark, right? Because as we saw, the key point in the last link was that the shidduch for Yishmael is an Egyptian woman. And what's the foreshadowing for Yitzchak Avinu is, Mazel Tov, Besuel married Rivka. So we have very similar experiences. There's a similar test. There's an almost death. There's a miraculous rescue. There's the message from the Malach. There's the promise of multiplication afterwards. There's a sudden, open up my eyes and I see something new. And there's going to be marriage afterwards, which is going to begin the multiplication and the family growth that that Hashem is promising. Now, there's the one key difference between all the stories. The huge difference is how does the parent, besides how do they react to Hashem, which Chazal are not seeing the Pesukim, because it's not in the Pesukim, Hagar doesn't do it, right? Hagar just doesn't daven. If you're not davening, presumably you're complaining. But how is the son or the child referred to? Remember Yishmael, it was so cold. Yishmael was the na'ar, he was the yeled, he's the boy, he's the lad. This, exactly, right? Hagar distances herself from Yishmael. and Avraham Avinu, and it's incredible the number of ways that the Torah does this. You know, we don't have time to have like a whole Akedah Sitzvah Shir right now, but just a couple of pieces of it. You know, the number of times in the Parsha that Yitzchak is referred to as Avram's son, right? The number of times Hashem calls him his son, Avram's calling him his son, the Malach is calling him his son, the Torah is referring to him by name, Yitzchak Beno, Yitzchak Beno, the love and the closeness, Bincha, Yechidcha, Sherahavta, Yitzchak, there's no running away, right? Avram does not react to the test by insulating himself from the pain, by distancing himself from Yitzchak. Other way around. It's the only time we have where the two of them talk to each other, Bechlal, is in these psukim over here. And it's actually mind-blowing how the Torah captures the degree to which the father and son are close and the degree to which the father and son are in sync. So I'll just show a couple of the layers of it. Avram and Yitzchak talk to each other. By the way, Yishmael and Hagar, I don't think ever talk to each other in the whole Chumash. We never see a conversation between Hagar and Yishmael, not once. We see one conversation between Yitzchak and Avraham, and in it they are in perfect sync. So how so? Level one, we're told, Vayelchu shnehem yachdav, they're walking together. That begins the conversation in Pasuk Vav, and then that's repeated to end the conversation in the end of Pasuk Ches. So they're walking together, and the whole conversation is bracketed with Vayelchu shnehem yachdav, that they're walking together. I didn't keep my notes, my notebook here, but we'll show this anyway. I think I remember this. I do remember this. If you count the number of words, even each time the balance of the two. So we have Yitzchak calling Avraham, and twice in these couple of psukim, just in Pasuk Zion, Pasuk Ches, two psukim. Yitzchak refers to Avram, and we have Aviv Avi. Twice we have the reference to Avram as the father of Yitzchak. And also twice in these two psukim, we have the reference to Yitzchak as the son of Avram. Hineni bini, and Hashem yir lo haseh lo ola bini. There's a total balance. So they're together, they're together. Father, father, son, son. The two sentences that they make are each six words long. I'm telling you, this is literally unbelievable, right? You can count. So what does Yitzchak say to Avram? Six words. A six-word question. Avram answers him with a six-word answer. Elokim yireh lo haseh le'ola bini. All in perfect harmony. And this is the last one, is that if you take a look at everything they say to each other, because there's a little preamble in Pasuk Zion, right? Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham aviv, vayomer aviv, vayomer hineni bini. And then Yitzchak says, here's the fire and the sticks, so where's the ola? If you include the aviv and the avi, the avi and the hineni bini, each person, Yitzchak and Avraham, the total syllables that they say to each other is equal. It's actually 18 syllables in each one. I'm going to just count it quickly, just to make sure that my math isn't off. All right, so Yitzchak says, avi is two, all right, and then he says, he ne ha ish ve ha etzim ve aye ha se leola. I think that's 18. Right from wrong. Very sure that's 18. And then Avram, same thing. He ne ni be ni, five. And then, so what does Avram say? Elokim yir elo ha se leola be ni, 18. Everything is in harmony, everything is in balance. You have the father and son who are just getting closer and closer. Rashi says, actually, they go closer over the course, right? Because Rashi says the first Vayelchu shnehem yachdav, Yitzchak's confused. They're walking together, but Yitzchak doesn't know the score, right? The second Vayelchu shnehem yachdav, Yitzchak's figured out what's going on, but nonetheless, the father and the son are still in harmony, right? So I think, you know, just in terms of what to step away from this piece of it about. So we talked about Hagar and Bas Paro, and we talked about coming from difficult circumstances, but at the end of the day, it's up to us to decide what we do with it. And, you know, in the moment of suffering, do we react by running to the person who's in pain, or do we react by running away and focusing on ourselves? Here, when it comes to Avraham and Hagar, so we see, first of all, we see the question of the bitachon, right? We see the bitachon piece, and that's what Chazal were flagging earlier. know, in the moment of crisis, do you have faith? That's an interesting way to read the Akedah. Do you have faith that somehow, some way, Hashem is going to resolve things? I don't know how, but I have faith that Hashem is going to make things work out somehow at the end. Or do you just abandon hope and you forget the name of your son, you forget the name Yishmael, you forget everything that stands for, and you just wallow in your own pain? And the second piece is, you know, it's invariable that the Bein Adam L'Makom question is always related to the Bein Adam L'Chavera question, right? You want to see how healthy someone's Emunah B'Tachon are? Look and see how they treat other people, and you can usually get a sense of that. And it's not a coincidence that the same Hagar who comes up short in her faith in Hashem in the moment of the test also comes up short as a mother, as a human mother in the moment of crisis. And Avraham Avinu, it's the exact opposite. Right? He's able to maintain his faith in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he's also able to maintain the personality of Chesed. He's able to maintain that love and that closeness with his son throughout the ordeal. So, you know, stepping back from the whole piece, I think we can understand the importance of the parallels between, for sure, Avraham and Hagar that Chazal are flagging, between Avraham and Bas Paro that Chazal are flagging. Maybe in a couple of weeks, we'll revisit the Keturah piece. We'll try to rehabilitate Hagar a little bit there, but at least for now, you know, the message we're supposed to get is to definitely be like the daughter of Paro, just be like the daughter of Paro from Sefer Shmos, not like the daughter of Paro from Sefer Bereishis. Okay.
I have a question. Rabbi Goldstein, I have a question.
Okay, love to hear it.
Why? I had a discussion this morning with somebody. Okay, fine. But what about Avraham? Why did he give Hagar so little food and water? Why do you do that? I mean, if you want to compare, when Eliezer went to find a wife for Yitzchak, there was camels full of all kinds of stuff for the traveling and everything. Here, Avraham gives a flask, you know, a canteen of water and some bread, and that's it. If you're going to go in the desert, you need more than that. I mean, where's Avraham? Why did he do that?
Well, it sounds like from the psukim that there was enough food. The problem was that she got lost. Also, I wonder, where was she supposed to go?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Was she supposed to go to, we know from Parshas Bashalach, the normal way to go to Mitzrayim is not through the desert, right? There's a long detour we took to go through the desert. You're supposed to just walk down the coast if she's supposed to go to Mitzrayim. She got lost. What's she doing in the desert? The image we have is like Avram's in the desert and he sends her away into the cactus. And the Pesukim don't say she walked into he sent her to the cactus. She got lost.
You think that he's going in, nevertheless, in the desert, though. Just one little canteen of water? I mean,
he's not sending her to the desert.
I don't know.
Exactly. Her ways is off. That's why Rashi comments on her being lost, right? The idea of Hagar being lost resonant concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good question. But I think that's the Pshat L'Psukim. Here, yeah, the one Hashem calls the Malach. Hashem. Oh, interesting. It's the Alan's pointing out the angel of judgment calls out to Hagar, but the angel of Rachamim calls out to Avram. Interesting. But I'm sure there's a whole lot more to say on both of those stories. But I think our time's up for now. So thanks everybody for coming. And Rishon, I'm looking forward to more. Next week, I think we'll do Akedah Yitzchak. We'll cheat a little bit, but we can't skip the Akedah. So that's what we do next week. All right, Yashar Koach. Take care.
Thank you.